This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight, Libya's upcoming presidential election, scheduled for Friday, has been delayed. The death toll from a shipwreck off Madagascar's northeastern coast has risen to at least 64. And there has been a rise in the number of coup d'etats in Africa. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. South Africa's National Institute of Communicable Disease has expressed cautious optimism that the wave of new COVID-19 infections caused by the Omicron variant has peaked in the country. The Institute's scientists think the wave began a month ago, around the time that South African genetic sequencers first detected the new highly contagious variant that now is found around the world. If the Omicron outbreak is indeed subsiding in South Africa, it will be the shortest and least severe COVID-19 wave yet seen in the country. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Clinician and infectious diseases expert Professor Ramnik Aluwalia says previous COVID-19 waves in South Africa took quite a long time to build before cresting and slowly going down. But Omicron's unique.
So it's like a hurricane of infections at a very quick pace. And we also anticipate it will disappear also very quickly. But the time the hurricane is going to stay with us, which is this month in crucial time, it's going to cause a rapid rise of infections, highly contagious variant.
As vicious as the Omicron outbreak's been in terms of speed, says Aluwalia, it's generally caused mild disease. He says a few factors have helped to make this wave less severe.
One is that 60 to 70% of South Africans who actually got infected with COVID, which we anticipated during the first, second, and third wave, produce something called a natural immunity, and that's holding its camp. They are fighting this Omicron better than comparative to people who had not got the natural immunity. The second thing, which is obviously the game changer, is vaccines. That the vaccine immunity, irrespective of the breakthrough infections happening, the virus escapes the immune system for a while, recognizes this variant, and produces the immune system so strong that it overloads the viral load of the Omicron and protects severity of a disease.
And the last South African scientists are now working to establish whether Omicron's a sign that COVID-19's lost some of its virulence and is, in effect, becoming weaker. It's much too early to speculate on this, says Aluwalia, but the signs from the South African context are favorable.
But at the end of the day, it's a COVID. It will affect the non-vaccinated the most. It will affect old and comorbid people. And we need to watch out because every life matters at the end of the day.
He thinks more waves of COVID-19 will follow and that Omicron isn't the last of the variants. That's why vaccination remains the world's number one weapon.
When you have a vaccine inside your body, it will also have a high chance of not allowing the virus to mutate that much, which is also importantly for the whole world to watch, because that's the only way we can come out of the fourth or the other waves or the fifth or the sixth waves that we have to follow eventually because of this mutating virus. The vaccine further reduces the chances of transmission also. It reduces quite...
Aluwalia says while natural immunity and vaccines should cause COVID-19 to lose its bite, every twist and turn of the pandemic must be taken seriously. He says even after the Spanish flu pandemic that began in 1918 became less serious, it sparked variants that still claim the lives of hundreds of thousands of people every year.
I do anticipate 2023 to be again living with COVID, and unfortunately that looks like to be the scenario, which means not going to be like a Spanish flu where it will suddenly disappear. which means it will take time to disappear, as most of the people in many parts of the world are still not vaccinated, which will still allow a lot of the virus to still give a chance to make mutations and still find ways to penetrate into our human system and try to evade our human system.
Ahluwalia says it can only be hoped that over the next few years, natural and vaccine immunity work to such a degree that COVID-19 becomes increasingly timid. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Every year, South Africans look forward to Christmas as a time for joy, feasting and festivities. Despite the latest bit of optimism from scientists, many families say they are bracing for a bleak Christmas, with jobs and incomes for many wiped out by the coronavirus pandemic. Tusokumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Christmas in South Africa is usually a time for friends and family to congregate, party, drink beer, eat good food, and wear new clothes. However, the advent of a new coronavirus variant seems to have dampened this year's festive mood. Some now call it Christmas Corona, others say it's Christmas lockdown, and some are referring to the holiday as Christmas 20-nothing. 27-year-old Leslie Hlatjwa says before the COVID-19 pandemic, he had a good job. When his company shut its doors midway through 2020, he resorted to selling cigarettes to motorists at street corners. But authorities banned that, saying cigarettes put smokers at more risk of severe illness if they get infected with COVID. With a few days to go before Christmas, Hlatjwa says his hands have not touched a decent amount of money in the past 12 months.
Beginning of the COVID, I lost my job. I don't even have money to buy something for my auntie, for my mom. As I said, Christmas for me. As I said, Christmas. No money.
Thembani Zikode has nothing good to say about this year's Christmas.
Currently, I don't have plans for Christmas. I'll see, like, when the day. This time, you see it's dry. Like, you see this pandemic, hey, it's killing us.
Small entrepreneurs have been hard hit by COVID. This has left them facing a bleak Christmas for their business and families. In 2010, Zandile Mahlaba established a Curio clothing and jewelry shop along Vilakazi Street in Soweto, and named it Ndiza Craft Market. This is the same street where Nelson Mandela once lived, so every visitor to Mandela's house, now a museum, passed by her shop. She says business was good till COVID struck.
It paralyzed us anyway, this COVID thing. People are dying, the numbers are going up. There were lots of tourists. Now, we see less number of them.
Shaka Zulu, who sells bags, hats, shoes, belts, and other wares decorated with cow skins along the same street, was also hit hard by COVID.
Things are bad. Hey. 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month, 5 weeks without making a sale. Nothing. A single simple sale you can't make, yeah. With the sudden introduction of this new Omicron virus, there's nothing happening here.
In the absence of festivities, parties, new clothes and good food, they say it's the second Christmas they will be erasing from their calendar, just like last year. Tusokumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Libya's parliamentary committee has announced the presidential vote scheduled for Friday will be delayed. This comes after the electoral committee was disbanded for failing to publish the final list of candidates. The French news agency AFP reports the election was marred by divisions over whether controversial figures should be allowed to participate. Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, son of the late dictator Muammar Gaddafi, and the military chief in eastern Libya, Khalifa Haftar, were both running despite accusations of war crimes. Interim Prime Minister Abdulhamid Dabiba's candidacy also sparked controversy, as he earlier had pledged not to run. The vote scheduled for Friday was intended to mark a fresh start for a war-torn Libya, more than a decade after its 2011 revolt that toppled and killed Muammar Gaddafi. Analysts are warning that election-related violence could easily flare again in Libya. The U.S. ambassador to Libya, Richard Norlden, called for calm and new efforts to de-escalate the tense security situation. He also said that work towards holding elections must be a priority. Power grabs, unconstitutional military takeovers, or coup d'etats are back in Africa. In the past few years, there has been a rise in the spate of successful or attempted coups across the continent, even in North Africa. These coups are contributing to instability, corruption, human rights abuse, impunity, and poverty in Africa. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy spoke with Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, about why coups are making a comeback in Africa.
Well, there are a confluence of factors. Let me highlight just five of them. The first is that previous coups in recent years have been tolerated, and so it has incentivized other military leaders to try and attempt coups. Secondly, we've seen over the last decade an increased politicization of militaries in Africa as leaders have been trying to stay in power for a longer period of time. You know, they've brought in military leaders into that process, and so that has emboldened military leaders to become more political in their vision and perspective. Thirdly is, you know, we've seen increased aggressive external engagement by some actors in the Gulf states and Russia that have been trying to manipulate these coup actions so that they can increase their leverage. And so there's definitely some external encouragement for these coups. You know, fourth, complementary to that is that we've seen a weakening of governance norms, of democratic norms in Africa over the last decade. And so regional bodies that can push back against these coups are weaker than they were before. And then fifth, I would say, you know, the international democratic community has been distracted. There have been other crises that they've been dealing with domestically, internationally, the pandemic, and this has created more space for these autocratically minded leaders to try to mount these coups.
By demonstrating how easily power can be grabbed by force and undermining the constitution, these coups are weakening existing political institutions, encouraging political violence, and increasing the prospects of civil wars. Are African regional organizations able to resort to active intervention to curtail this rising trend of coups in Africa?
Well, I think they are, and I think they're a critical part of it. However, you know, the lack of a strong response on the part of regional organizations, specifically the African Union, ECOWAS, IGAD, this has enabled these coups and has created something of a contagion effect. So, you know, when these coups have happened, the regional bodies have rhetorically condemned them, but they haven't followed up with very concrete and significant action. So the result has been these coup leaders have effectively gotten their way. You know, they're staying in power, they're being recognized, and in fact, they're in charge of the ostensible transitions that are in place, transitions that they have very little incentive to try to implement. And so we've seen these juntas dragging their feet. I think the regional bodies have recognized that they need to take stronger action. And so I think they're starting to push harder on some of these juntas. And I think that's where we're at. We'll see how much progress they're able to make. They need to be more strident in not recognizing them. This gives them political legitimacy. They need to really rally and block financial assistance, cutting them off from international debt relief. These juntas should not have access to the sovereign accounts, the financial accounts of these countries, which is what they're using to sustain their hold on power. And I think it just raises the point, when these coups happen, if they're not recognized regionally or internationally, then these coup leaders really have very little authority or power to sustain themselves, and they're going to be in more of a position to back down.
In November 2017, Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe was placed under house arrest, impeached, and eventually removed as a president. This was followed by two successful coups, in Mali in 2020 and in 2021. And this military takeover eventually led to the suspension of Mali from the Economic Community of West Africa states and the African Union in June 2021. Did these measures reverse the coup in Mali?
These measures on their own have not reversed the coups in Mali. Guaita remains in power and in charge of the transition. But it's not because suspensions were the wrong course of action. The problem was that they weren't followed up sufficiently with concrete action. Instead of insisting that Guaita step down and the military return to the barracks, ECOWAS effectively recognized Guaita as the leader of the transition, and this emboldened him and empowered him then delay the process. And as a result, you know, he's become more bold in disregarding direction from ECOWAS. And, you know, he believes that he can run out the clock on his terms, and ultimately ECOWAS international community is going to have to recognize him.
That was Joseph Siegel, the Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with my colleague Mohamed El-Shenawi. In Madagascar, authorities say at least 64 people died when a wooden cargo ship illegally carrying 130 passengers sank off the northeastern coast. News agencies say 45 passengers were rescued and around 20 remain missing. The search for survivors continues. The cargo ship was not authorized to transport people. It ran aground on a reef after its engines flooded. The country's police minister, an Air Force mechanic, and another police officer managed to survive after their helicopter crashed on a flight out to where the cargo ship had sunk. The pilot and another passenger are still missing. The Botswana government has announced that only those who are fully vaccinated are allowed to attend public gatherings of 100 people or more. Offenders will be fined up to $10,000 or face a 5-year jail term in a country where nearly 70% of the adult population is fully vaccinated. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Bokandisi Dube has the details.
As part of restrictions to blunt the spread of coronavirus, particularly during the festive season, Botswana announced a new rule barring the unvaccinated from attending public gatherings of 100 people or more. The new regulation, signed by Minister of Health Edwin Dikolodi on Monday, covers political, church and recreational gatherings. The organizers of meetings are expected to demand COVID-19 certificates, check patrons' body temperature and maintain a register of attendees, which must be made available for inspection by health authorities. Failure to observe the new regulations can result in a fine of $10,000 or a jail term not exceeding 5 years. The new rule could hit hard in the entertainment industry, which has been riding for brisk business during the festive season. Music promoter Zane Aftermath argues the regulation is unfair as the country has not made COVID-19 vaccination mandatory.
I feel it's not fair in the sense that a vaccination, as it is already in Botswana, is not yet mandatory. However, somebody can go to the bank without needing a vaccination card. Somebody can enter a bus without needing a vaccination card, but now they want that to be done at events. But vaccination is not mandatory in the country. Then the other thing, at least if they had subsidized our events, it would make sense.
President Mokgweetsi Masisi recently told BBC that the country does not intend to make COVID-19 vaccination mandatory.
We do not intend to impose a vaccine mandate simply because our laws do not allow it. People have enshrined in the Constitution fundamental freedoms, and one of those is based on access to vaccines or opportunity before you impose a mandate that restricts the right of a person.
Botswana is battling a surge in COVID-19 cases, largely driven by the new Omicron variant. But giving an update Monday, COVID-19 Task Force Scientific Advisor Mhomozi Matshaba says deaths due to the virus, which is extremely contagious but so far has not been as severe as its precursors, have remained low.
We report 3,845 cases in the three-day period. This brings us close to 1,300 cases per day. What we are seeing is that this number continues to increase as we are dealing with the new highly transmissible Omicron variant. Fortunately, this week we report no death since the last report.
Botswana is one of few countries in Africa expected to meet the WHO target of vaccinating at least 40% of eligible population by the end of December. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Havoroni, Botswana.
A drop in the levels of rainfall around Lake Chad in Cameroon has caused waterways to dry up and worsened the conflict between farmers and herders over scarce resources. Anne Nuzankwe reports from Kuseri on the border with Chad about efforts to make peace between the communities.
Gaddaf Mahamat is busy rebuilding his property, which was torched during a recent clash between farmers and herders in his community. He says he lost nearly everything.
On a perdu le mil, le riz, le chèvre.
He says they lost millet, rice, goat, chicken, many things. At the time, he had money, 400,000 Central African francs, that he put under the mattress. He says the money was burned as well as the medicine for his health. The scarcity of water in the far north region of Cameroon was the cause of the conflict. Gaddaf says members of the Musqueam community dug a reservoir to water their farms and raise fish, but the Arab herders wanted the reservoir closed, describing it as a death trap for their livestock. The two sides failed to compromise and the situation escalated. Musa Yeni, a member of the Arab herders community, says the fight started at his place. He says the Musqueams came to attack them. They called on their brothers. He says when the Musqueams saw that the herders outnumbered them, they fled. So the herders pursued them and burn their village. VOA requests interviews with officials of Cameroon's far north region, but they said they were not available to comment. According to the United Nations, over the last decades, the surface of Lake Chad, which feeds the far north of Cameroon, has decreased by 95%. Communities living along the lake, most of which are water dependent, are fighting for control of the dwindling resources, resulting in death, displacement, and destruction of property. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees and Cameroonian authorities recently organized a reconciliation ceremony in which communities' representatives committed to ending the violence. The UN organization also donated wells. This was not enough to resolve the conflict, as new violence broke out a few days after the ceremony.
C'est le début, parce que la restauration de la paix est un long processus.
Jean Bosco Rouchati of UNHCR Cameroon says this is the beginning. He also says the restoration of peace is a long process, but the UNHCR has just committed itself resolutely with all the parties involved in the conflict to the path of reconciliation, of social cohesion through dialogue and not through violent clashes. Experts believe that other solutions should be pursued.
La solution, peut-être idéale, serait de trouver des ressources alternatives.
Matt Mazra of the University of Maroua in Cameroon says the ideal solution will be to find other resources, alternative fishery resources that can, for example, employ modern fish farming methods. He also suggested the creation of artificial ponds. In the meantime, Gaddaf has set to rebuilding his house in hopes that no one will destroy it again. Anne Zwanke for VOA News, Kuseri, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.